Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Santos, and this is Bigger, Better World from International Living. In this podcast series, we introduce you to a bigger world full of communities that are safe, welcoming, beautiful, and largely undiscovered. A better world, a friendly, warm, great value world where you can live richer, travel more, invest for profit, and enjoy a better life. So let's get started. Welcome once again to Bigger, Better World. Today we're going to talk about something that can be a very scary process, and I speak from experience, buying a property overseas. Our guest today, Maria De Chico, did just that when she and her husband bought a home in northern Spain. She wrote about it for the July 2023 issue of International Living magazine in the article, An Expat's Experience Buying Property in Spain, and she's going to talk us through the process today. Maria, welcome to Bigger, Better World, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me today.
Now, today you're joining us from Zaragoza in the north of Spain, correct? Or is that Zaragoza?
Yes, it's Zaragoza, and it's really funny. I want to add this little add-in about how we got the name Zaragoza. It used to be a Roman city, and Caesar Augustus was the founder of Zaragoza. And if you really try hard and you say Caesar Augustus very, very fast, you might hear a bit of Zaragoza in the name. And that's how it became Zaragoza.
I also read that it was sometimes pronounced Saragossa.
Yes, that's the English way to say it, with the S's instead of the Z's.
Now, what was it that attracted you to this area?
Truth be told, I had no idea this place existed until I met my husband, who is what they call a maño here in Zaragoza. That means he's a native from this town, from the city of Zaragoza in Spain. And he was here till he was a teenager. And we met in Florida back in the States. Mm-hmm. So we came here a couple of times to visit for weddings, just to see family, and came to realize it was a very family-friendly city. And it had a lot to offer for us.
And where is Zaragoza located in Spain?
So again, most people probably don't even realize it's on that map, but if you are taking the train from Madrid to Barcelona or vice versa, it's actually smack in the middle of the two. So you have to go through Zaragoza in order to get to one of the two cities by way of train. Okay. So if you think about the northeast sector of Spain, it's just up there.
So I understand in your article, you bought your property back in 2021.
We did. So back in 2020, obviously the world was shut down from traveling, and I am no stranger to travel. My husband and I were traveling 3-4 times a year overseas for recreation, really. And it got to the point where 2020 kind of put us in a slump. You know, we had all this money in our pocket and we were really wanting to get back out there traveling, and I couldn't. So I traveled by way of the internet. And I would scroll through houses in Italy, you know, the €1 houses you could buy. And I would look through different pictures of places we could visit potentially when the world opened back up. And one day I said, you know, we could buy something with all this money that we've been sitting on. And we did.
Yeah, I think a lot of us were frustrated by suddenly being shut down, especially if you're, you know, like my wife and I were also used to traveling a lot, and we had lived in Ecuador for years. And now suddenly we were confined to the home, basically. So I can understand the impulse to get out there and do something. And I understand from your articles something that that we have in common. It says you bought your place sight unseen.
Yes. And, you know, it's funny. I was listening to one of your previous podcasts today, and that doesn't seem that uncommon, even though to me, it felt like the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah, we actually bought our condo in Ecuador. Well, we'd been in the building, so it wasn't completely blind, but we actually bought it based on photographs that were sent to us.
Sure. You know what we did? We actually, we called realtors and had them literally do a video walkthrough with us on the phone with a 6-hour time change. And they would take us around the apartment and show us all the nooks and crannies mm-hmm. of what we might be getting into. And that's how we eventually landed on the one we're in now, which is actually my first choice. So it worked out in the end, but we went through 4 or 5 of these video walkthroughs before we decided what we wanted.
Well, you actually had a head start, I guess, since your husband was familiar with the area.
Yeah, you know what? He didn't shoot in this area. I did because of our travels here. It's the ideal area to be living if you want to be a tourist, really, or if you want to have a vacation home in this city of Zaragoza. We are literally steps from the Basilica del Pilar, which is the foundation of the city. It's this enormous, you know, multi-spired cathedral along the Rio Ebro, and people flood down there daily for festivals, tapas. In fact, just downstairs, the very boisterous Tapas Street, which we knew about purchasing this sight unseen, but you know, being here is a different thing when you realize you have to try to sleep through the bar crowd that is up till at least midnight.
Right.
but this area is just so lively, and it's the place to be.
How long was it before you were able to actually go out and visit this place once you had purchased it? Because I know travel was still very difficult in 2021.
Sure. So the interesting thing is, when you purchase property in Spain, and I don't know if this is for all properties or just our situation, they actually gave us a very loose window of the purchase date. So we went through all these different agreements and documentation processes early on in the spring of 21. And they didn't actually need us out here till July, August. It was just completely open. So we said, well, let's look at our calendar and what works for us to get on an airplane and get out there. And it just so happened, you know, it worked out a few months past those agreement dates. And basically move-in day was the first day we saw it. We flew into town. I remember it was a Thursday evening, or rather Friday morning. We fly into town after a Thursday evening flight. Friday at noon, we had an appointment with the bank to open this bank account and make sure all the ducks were in a row.
Right.
And then Friday at 2, they said, okay, we'll give you a 15-minute walkthrough just to make sure everything's still good, that you still like it. And then at 2:30, we had the signing. It was a whirlwind. It was absolutely insane. And then that whole weekend was dedicated to buying IKEA furniture and painting the house and getting in here as quick as we could.
And when you purchased this, it was with the intent of just visiting there from time to time during the year?
Yeah, for now. I think, you know, originally in the back of our minds, when we started looking, it was just a pipe dream. It was just something to keep me busy.
Right.
The scrolling all day through different homes. And then we said, well, you know, maybe we could get something that we could rent it out, an Airbnb, a VRBO, something like that. And then it came to be, well, this is our place now, and we're going to put our beloved touch on it. And, you know, we want this place for ourselves. So after the scrolling and going through the variety of housing options, we decided that we didn't want to rent it. We wanted to have our stamp on this place and keep it as our own. And what we would try to do is come here 3-4 times a year for a couple of weeks at a time, and build a secondary holiday home for us and have somewhere that we can live abroad while still having a foot in the United States.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've often felt the same way. My wife talked about, you know, if we travel abroad, that we could put our home up for rent while we were gone. And it's just the idea of other people being in my space. I just didn't like that.
Yeah, I think it's tough for me to grapple with because, you know, if you turn it into a rental, then all of a sudden you've got to really reduce your footprint. You don't want people snooping through your clothes, your things. And
right.
It's no longer as homey. It's more like a shell or a box. And you come here and you'd have to bring everything all over. And part of the appeal of this place is that my daughter, when we purchased this, was 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of tough to travel with a toddler. And obviously, as she's close to 4 now, it's gotten a lot easier. But what we could do at the time is we would have everything we needed here. We would have the car seat, the crib, the stroller, all the toys. You know, anything we needed was already here. So
right.
Basically, we just had to pack a personal bag, hop in an airplane, and we'd be here. And that made traveling with her a lot easier, especially after the pandemic just made a mess of everything travel-wise.
Now that you've been going back and forth for a few years, are there any thoughts of maybe settling in Spain at some point?
At this point, my next step, I think, is going to be summering in Spain. So
right.
As you probably well know, the schools in America have a hiatus in the summer months, so 2-3 months at a time. Mm-hmm. The kids are not in school. So at this point, my kid's in daycare. We figure when she's in primary school or, you know, elementary school, then those summer months would be ideal that we could come spend 2-3 months. I think, you know, after that, who knows, but baby steps.
Now, I saw in the article that this is a one-bedroom, one-bath apartment.
Yes, it is a shoebox. Well, not to say we don't live in a palace in Florida.
Right.
We live in about 1,100 square feet in Florida, but here it's 40 square meters, so it's about 600 square feet. You know, once you get all the toys strewn about and all the belongings that I love to collect as we travel, it gets to be quite small. But like I said, it's in the heart of everything, so it's all we need.
And it seems like the price is probably a lot different from your place in Florida.
Yes, I think the price of this place was a huge reason we even went down this path.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to me to see that everything that went on the market when we were searching was maybe 75,000 euros to 120. And they were really nice places, much better, honestly, than this place. But, you know, as the radius expands beyond the Centro Historico, the price would get you a greater value of square footage.
Mm-hmm.
But the price tag on this was just unreal to us. And we couldn't even fathom, you know, how do they get away with this? A place like this in the States would just be chewed up in a heartbeat. So
my wife and I recently were in Florida and considered buying a property there, much thinking the same that you had there, that we could go down there from time to time ourselves and rent it the rest of the time. But one of the things that pulled us back from that was when we investigated the property taxes in the area. They were just really high. Like something that would be $200,000 would be like $6,000 a year in property taxes. Now, what are the property taxes like there in Spain?
Oh, Jim, you're not going to want to quote me on this. This is definitely my husband's department. But I'll tell you that the cost of living, being here or away, it's all one lump sum into our bank account.
Mm-hmm.
It all just gets deducted automatically. We figured it's about 2,000 euros annually, mm-hmm, coming out of that bank account.
For all
and
of
it all
expenses.
Just gets auto-deducted.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's with us being here or away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad at all.
No.
No.
I mean, I think we pay about that much in property taxes in our place in Florida, so.
Okay, well, let's get to the actual process itself of buying, because,
sure,
like I say, my wife and I went through the same thing, and it can be kind of scary, especially when you're doing a lot of stuff remotely. Now, one of the first things you talked about was that for Spain, there aren't any restrictions as to who can buy property.
Yeah, so we weren't actually aware of restrictions or otherwise, and didn't take that much into account, only because I have dual citizenship with Italy. Now, you would think that because my husband is Spanish and from Spain, holding a Spanish passport, that he would be the one that got our foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, when you're gone for too long from Spain and haven't renewed your documentation, like he mistakenly did, it was me that we leaned on.
Right.
So it was my passport, my Italian passport, that got the process started. So we honestly didn't look too further beyond that to see what kind of restrictions there may be, because we knew I am a European citizen and I could get our foot in the door that way very easily.
Now, another part of the process you described was you had to get your foreign identification numbers for Spain. Was that a complicated process?
So the process is about as complicated as going down to your local consulate, which for me is in Miami. Mm-hmm. Being in Orlando, that's a decent drive. And basically getting an appointment with them is next to impossible. So that was the only struggle. But once you have your paperwork together, it's a very, very easy process.
You also mentioned, we talked about this a little bit earlier, that you did some research before buying, looked at a lot of places online. And that's really great advice. We also did the same thing. We're using even Google Earth to try to look at neighborhoods and picking out different areas. You also mentioned that it was important to contact multiple agents.
Yes. So when we used the Spanish platform called Idealista to search for the possible properties, We found that boxing ourselves into one real estate company was not going to help us. And the reason being, the properties were literally flying off the page. I'd find something one day that I loved and the next day it was gone.
Right.
The process really through Idealista is you can call a phone number, which is challenging from the States. You'd have to use Google Voice or any number of other calling procedures that might cost you a little extra. And then also you really have to speak Spanish. So Right. It came down to the availability of my husband to be home to speak Spanish with these people and the time change to get these people on the phone. So all that considered, I try to do my due diligence by emailing them. Mm-hmm. And email doesn't go far when you're speaking English to a Spaniard. They don't want to deal with you.
Right.
So I got on Google Translate and I started just translating what I wanted to say. And I know some pretty basic Spanish. I think I'm actually pretty good at Spanish, but the Spaniards might not think so. So my limited Spanish would get translated and I pop it in an email and that would garner better results.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point we'd say, okay, I know you think we're crazy, but we need a walkthrough.
Yeah.
Can you call us from the property and get us on the phone with you? But anyway, because these places were disappearing left and right, it was really challenging. So we had to make sure that we talked to several different people to have a couple things up our sleeve when we had the time to meet with them.
One of the issues we ran into in Ecuador at the time, there have been some changes since then, but at the time, all you had to do to be a real estate agent was say, I'm a real estate agent. There wasn't any really licensing or registration procedure. In Spain, are the real estate agents that you dealt with, are they all licensed?
Well, as far as I could tell, they all seemed above board. All worked with different property companies that were well-researched. And, you know, when you start talking to the real estate agents, some of them would say, oh, you know, that's a really great company. You should keep working with them. And that kind of respect was great for us to hear because some of the people we did work with, we loved their personalities and how good they were to get back with us. But in the end of the day, they couldn't get us the properties we wanted. So they would actually refer us and say, you know, this other company you're working with is truly a good company. So continue down that path.
Yeah, that's very uncommon in the States. You're usually very jealous about which agencies you use.
Oh, yeah. You can't dig your toes in multiple pools like that in the States. And another thing that just completely blows my mind about the process in Spain is there's no bidding war. And that is, if we had that in the States, that would just be a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
So I may be getting ahead of myself here, but the bidding war does not exist. And the purpose behind that is because when you put down your señal or your aura saying, hey, I'm kind of interested in this property, but I'm not so sure yet. Can you take it off the market? They do. Plop, right off the market. And it's yours to look at. And so you have no obligation whatsoever. And you you look at it and make up your mind and then you move forward.
This would be the small deposit that you're talking about $1,000 or 1,000 euros.
Yes.
Yeah. In the U.S.,
so
you'd consider that like earnest money.
Exactly. It's earnest money. And while that's happening, nobody else is allowed to look at the property. And as far as Idealista is concerned, it comes right off the website.
Okay. Yeah. It is not that situation in the U.S. Yeah.
No, not at all.
So the offer price is the price? There's no negotiating on that?
You know, it's tough to say because with us, we were told further down the line by our real estate agent for that property that we could negotiate down a few thousand euros.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I found that because things were flying off the shelf so quickly at a list price, no, there was no real wiggle room.
Right.
And I was surprised to see that because the properties that were, you know, going on the market and then immediately coming down were modern, you know, larger spaces at the same price point as ours.
Mm-hmm.
But people wanted modern and they didn't want what we have. We have the timbered, you know, the timbered archways in the living area, and we have all the old tile and the old you know, oak shutters and everything. So it's very historical, our property, and people don't want that. So the really new ones, the Spaniards want those.
Right.
So those were coming off the market immediately.
How about as far as opening a bank account? You touched on that earlier. Did you find that to be a complicated process?
Yes. So once we got here, it was not complicated whatsoever. But I'll tell you some of the challenges we faced is we wanted to take care of everything abroad. And as I told you, we arrived in Spain, and that morning we had a meeting with the bank. So we would have loved to do all this prior, but the issue is you can only deal with your local branch. So if you have a local branch, let's say a few blocks from your home, that's your branch. Mm-hmm. And you need to open a bank account in person at that branch. You can't even change your password for your online account unless you go in person to that branch. So everything is very kind of old school in that respect. So we tried to do what we could. We researched different bank accounts for like expats and people like us who are just kind of in transit, one foot here, one foot there. And ultimately came across Banco Sabadell. And I liked them because they had something called the Key account, which, as it turns out, I thought I could only open through my Italian citizenship, but I've actually opened the account with my American passport and my NIE, which is that tax number I had to go get.
Right.
So with a mix of my American passport and the NIE that I got with my Italian passport, I was able to open the bank account. But the other challenge was once we got to the bank, you know, it's Spain. We had an appointment for, let's say, I think it was 11 a.m. The bank was closed and they were all out having merienda or almuerzo, whatever mealtime it was of the day. And the bank was completely locked and we had no time. And they finally showed up and we got in the door kind of in a panic at this point because, you know, we had to close on the house in about an hour.
Yeah.
And bad planning on our part, I guess. But we got in there and English was not spoken. So thankfully, I had my husband. We could have probably gone through the back and forth of using Google Translate on my phone. But there was a moment there where from, you know, sitting in the seat of only understanding limited Spanish, I thought they weren't going to allow us to have the account. But really, what they were upselling us.
Right.
So we got through it, and the bank account was no problem, and they actually covered all the expenses we needed, including home insurance and everything else that you might consider necessary to have a home. It all just dumps in and out of that account, and it's been very easy ever since we opened it.
And I would think it's important to make sure that the bank will let you pay like local utility bills and things online for the months that you're not there, that you have internet access to it.
Yeah, everything's easy peasy. We can access everything from home. Banco Sabadell has this feature with the Key account. Everything is in English. So we have their app and online. We can deal with whatever we need. And then all the utilities companies, they may be in Spanish. But again, Google Translate is a beautiful thing.
Right.
And it's all very easy for us to manage from abroad or when we're here.
Well, once you've made your first couple of payments, it becomes pretty routine, I would think.
Absolutely. The first couple trips back here, every now and then we'd come check our mailbox upon being away 3-4 months, and there'd be all these notices in the mailbox just say, oh no, you know, we forgot to report our water usage on the water meter or this and that. And there are all these little things that we had to kind of learn how to deal with not being here all the time, because if you're living somewhere all the time, you could obviously, you know, open the closet door outside and look at the water meter and report it, but we're not here. Mm-hmm. So we had to kind of get around all that and automate some things. But now we're good to go. And those are out of sight, out of mind.
Now, another really key piece of advice that you give in this article is to make sure that you have a local attorney to help with the process.
Yeah, the lawyers are actually not something common here. It was a preference of ours because it is common in the States to have a lawyer in this kind of dealing. And kind of gave us peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I got on Google and I just looked up abogado for real estate, you know, lawyer for real estate. And I narrowed it down to 3 or 4 companies. Again, I emailed them in my Google Translate Spanish, and I eventually got a response. And It was more, honestly, we did not need this person, but it was more peace of mind to make sure that the documents we were reading along the way made sense, that they weren't trying to screw us over in any way, mm-hmm. and that anything that could have gotten lost in translation between how we do things in the States and how they do things here could have been met with a legal representation.
Yeah, it's great for peace of mind, especially if there's any part of the process is going to be remote. And it's also important to remember that in many countries, unless a document is in the official language of the country, it's not considered a legal document.
Yes. So, gosh, I really feel like I'm doing a commercial for Google at this point, but Google Translate has a documentation feature where you can upload any document. And so we would get these contracts and we'd upload them to Google. And we were able to review line by line exactly what those documents said in English. Mm-hmm. And that really helped us. But even then, when you get to the English translation, you might see something you don't like. And that's where the lawyer would come in.
Right. And sometimes those translations are a little stilted. It's a little difficult to understand exactly what they mean.
And that's where my Spanish husband comes in.
Another reason to have an attorney, you brought up in the article too, was in case you need a power of attorney for signing documents in your stead if you're not going to be there.
Yes. Thankfully, we didn't have to walk that path, but we started to. Because of COVID, we still didn't know, you know, can we get to Spain in time? Are we going to need to do the signing remotely? And if so, who's going to carry that out for us? Mm-hmm. So we printed all the documents. We walked the path, like I said, and it wouldn't have been challenging, but it would have been time consuming at the very least. Right. So our lawyer could have been the power of attorney if we had desired it.
Now, getting back to the purchase process, you mentioned that first deposit of about 1,000 euros that says that you're interested. Then the next step is the compraventa, which is like a intent to purchase. At that point, you had to pay a 10% deposit.
Yes. So at that point, it's beyond just intent, right? So you intend to purchase, means you're looking at it. That's when the ARAS or the SENIAL comes in. That's that $1,000 payment where you want to take it off the market so nobody else can see it, but you're just not quite sure. You want to maybe go through some negotiations.
Right. And that's refundable.
That is refundable. So the compraventa is the 10% deposit that is going to be 10% of the final negotiated number. And that point is you really got your foot in the door with this property. You plan on purchasing it, but you're just trying to nail down the facts.
And then after the contracts or the compraventa has been signed and approved by all the parties, that's when you move to setting the closing date?
Yes. So at this point, you're going to get basically a receipt for all the things that you might need to pay. And I know that in my article, I listed kind of the details of what that is. And it may be a little bit different from place to place, but we paid. So you'll have your line by line list of that final negotiated price for the property. Then you're going to have taxes on top of that. Fees, more taxes. And then the notary, which is that signing process, that also costs a little bit of extra money as well.
Right.
So you'll get that as part of your closing date conversation. And you just want to make sure that there's nothing funky going on. I know that with us, we almost lost the property. We told them we were going to walk because at this point, the person we were purchasing from, they were also purchasing a property and they needed the money ASAP to purchase their new property. Mm-hmm. So of course we still hadn't seen our property.
Yeah.
And they wanted more than 10% for that secondary contract, that compraventa. They wanted like 80%. They wanted almost all of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, at this point we talked to our lawyer and we said, this doesn't sniff right. I don't think we should do this. And we hemmed and hawed and it was a really tough decision. And we said, you know what, we're going to walk, we're going to walk away from this one. And lo and behold, not 2 hours later, we get a phone call from the real estate agent. He says, okay. The other guy sorted out his finances. You're good. Let's continue.
Yeah.
So at that point, we had the numbers, you know, all those final details are figured out. And this is that last point where you say, okay, this is exactly what you're going to expect. on that day that you sign the deed.
Now, on your list of the fees and everything, property tax, registration, transfer tax, that's all pretty standard. You listed the agent fees there. Does the buyer pay the real estate fees, or does that come out of the purchase price?
If I recall, it came on top of.
On top of, okay.
On top of, but I can't be sure on that one either, Jim.
The other thing kind of stood out was the value-added tax, the VAT, was 21%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a sizable chunk.
At this point, it was, how much do we owe you? just tell us where to sign.
What's the bottom line? Right.
There's always going to be added this and added that. And at this point in the game, we were in. So, mm-hmm. What's another 21%?
Well, another piece of good advice you gave was when you're transferring the money over for it to complete the process, overestimate the amount of money that you're going to need.
Oof, that was a challenge, I'll tell you what. I don't know if you've ever spent any time wiring money abroad, but...
I have, and it's a scary process.
Yeah. So at the time, so right now, I haven't looked lately, but I mean, the euro is doing really well. So at the time, we were at maybe 126.
Mm-hmm.
For the transfer of money, and it was so much extra money on top of, you see this beautiful price tag, you say, oh, we could buy this apartment in Spain for 75,000 euros, and then because all those wire transfer fees really started to add up, because right. Not only are you transferring money abroad where you have the added fees, but you have to transfer that money from US dollars to euros. So when that transfer happens, you're not quite aware of the hidden fees. So there's multiple hops when the wire transfers are carried out. It goes from the American bank to some middleman bank to some other bank, and then it finally gets where it's going. And you might lose a couple bucks in the exchange. Mm-hmm. So the first time we did our wire transfer, we underpaid. Maybe it was $30, $40 just given the transfers, but we underpaid. So the second one, we said, we better overpay. And by the third time we transferred money, it kind of all evened out, but there was still money left over at the end. They said, well, you got to tack that onto that final dollar because you missed it.
Right.
So it's kind of tricky. So I would just say, always overpay, and they will give you a check in the mail back, which is what finally ended up happening. Is after all was said and done, we signed the paperwork. About 2 months later, we received a fairly large check in the mail for mm-hmm. all the money that we overpaid.
Now that the process is all done and you're in the home, you own the property, is there anything that you would have done differently?
Oh gosh, I think no. Honestly, it was a trial by fire. It was mm-hmm. It was not something I was familiar with. We have one home. I've never owned a home before. I've owned this home in Florida, and obviously the two paths are very different. So we didn't really know what we were getting into here. And I got to say, as we stepped through the process, even though there were bumps in the road, it wasn't that bad. And I don't think that I'd really do anything differently except, change the way the euro was acting back then, because we could have saved thousands of dollars, but that's not anybody control.
Right.
But if the dollar was what the dollar to euro is, what it is today, man, that would have been great. But mm-hmm. no, otherwise, I honestly think that the process was as smooth as it could have been. We love our apartment here. And, it's old. It's 1900. So we're having fun doing little renovations here and there. And that's what we love to do at our home in Florida. So it keeps us busy. Every trip we come and just do a little bit here, a little bit there. And we feel like the value for what we got is tremendous, and we're really building a home for ourselves here. Even though it's not a permanent one, a holiday home is just as good. We're making lots of memories, so we really enjoy it.
Well, we've been chatting with Maria DiCicco, author of An Expat's Experience, Buying Property in Spain. Just one of the many useful articles you'll find in the July 2023 edition of International Living magazine. Don't forget, you can learn more about Spain and many other expat destinations at the Ultimate Go Overseas Bootcamp in Denver, Colorado, this September 2nd through the 4th. I'll be there shamelessly promoting my own books and answering your questions about our travels overseas and the podcast. So go to intliving.com/Denver for details and a discount before time runs out. That's intliving.com/Denver. Maria, thanks again for sharing your experience with us here on Bigger, Better World.
Thanks, Jim.
Bigger, Better World podcast is a production of International Living. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. If you have an idea for an episode or a question you'd like us to answer, email us at mailbag@internationalliving.com. And don't forget to put podcast in the subject line of your email. That's mailbag@internationalliving.com. We created Bigger, Better World to help showcase the ideas we explore at International Living each month and grow our community of travel lovers, expats, and experts who believe, as we do, that the world is full of opportunity to create a more interesting, more international life. You don't have to be rich or famous to do that. You just need to know the secrets, and that's what we bring you at International Living. If you haven't become a member yet, you can do it today with a special discount offer for podcast listeners. You'll receive our monthly magazine plus a bundle of special extras. You'll find the link in our show notes, or you can go to intliving.com/podcast. That's intliving.com/podcast. Next week, it's off to an often overlooked expat destination, the Mediterranean islands of Malta. Until then, this is Jim Santos for International Living, reminding you, there's a bigger, better world out there just waiting for you.